is The Commons Touch.
The Commons Touch.
On City Talk 105.9.
A very good afternoon from me, Larry Neild, here on City Talk 105.9 with The Commons Touch. It's our weekly look at politics. Well, the good old post office has been given a reprieve, thankfully. It's hard to believe the voice of the great British public has finally been heard by the government. So hopefully when the time comes, my pension will be in very, very safe hands. Thank you very much, Mr. Brown. We're officially in a recession, but so is Germany, so we're in good company. And the bank rate is going down. It's now 3%. Some say it might go down to zero. And in the middle of this is my guest today, because she's in the thick of the economy at the Treasury. It's Angela Eagle, the MP for Wallasey and Secretary to the Exchequer. Is that your job, Angela?
It's Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury, which means I'm responsible for doing all the taxes on vices.
Like. So you don't mean you take letters down on the dictaphone, no?
No.
It's a ministerial job?
It is a ministerial job. It's part of the... There's a ministerial team of five at the... Treasury. We have unusually two people who are in the cabinet. That's obviously the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Alistair Darling, and Yvette Cooper, who's Chief Secretary, and she does all of the expenditure plans going forward 3 years. And then we've got Stephen Timms, who's the Financial Secretary and does taxes, HM Revenue and Customs, and the City Minister, Ian Pearson, and myself.
So your big boss is the Chancellor?
That it's indeed. My big boss is Alistair Darling.
How often do you see Mr. Darling?
Oh, very, very regularly. We meet as a team regularly. I think Alistair's just jetted off to Washington with the Prime Minister for the G20 conference, which is happening early next week.
Well, we'll talk about the economy later, Angela. What about the post office? It's great news, that, isn't it? Because there was this big fear that we were going to lose... whether it was scaremongering, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000 post offices, if they had lost this big contract, you know, the card that enabled you to get your pension and other things at the post office. I like the post office. I think they're
great. Yes, I think it's very good news. I always go and see my local sorting officers at Christmas. I'll be doing that soon, and I give them a bottle of whiskey for their raffle to thank them for all the extra work they do delivering Christmas cards and everything. And they are really in touch with what goes on in the community. It's important as well, I think, in this era when banks are in such difficulties, that we remember we've actually got a people's bank with lots of branches in all of our communities. And so I was contacted by a lot of people about the worries with the post office card account, and I'm really pleased that James Purnell made the decisions he made last week, which basically save that account and ensure that we can... make certain that this branch network can carry on. I think we're putting in £1.7 billion of extra support so that we can keep that network
alive.
Is
that a 10-year contract? Or?
That's right, with a prospect that it could go further as well. So that wouldn't be the end of it after 10 years.
Because what has always amazed
either.
Me, Angela, is that when I've gone to the post office to post a letter in the city centre here, there's always a queue a mile long, and I'm thinking, they're closing post offices down because they say there's not a demand for them. And, well, I go here and... It's a half hour wait. In fact, there's one post office in Liverpool. I'm not going to say which one it was, and it said, "To save time, we will no longer be selling envelopes." And I thought, this is the post office. This is what they do. They'll be stopping selling stamps next.
Well, there's no sign of that yet. I don't know whether you're going to get your Christmas editions of stamps in, but that always causes an extra queue in my experience.
It's a special occasion. Well, I'm glad about that. Let's move to some questions. It's the bit my guests always like, where I get into the speaker's chair and fire away for some questions. You've done this before, so this is a new round. They get harder as we go along. And at the end of it, after round three, you get a badge. Let me ask you, Angela, what film would you watch more than once?
Oh, I watch loads of films more than once because I'm a film fan. So I'm a big Mae West fan. I know all of her films.
Really? Mae West? Wow.
Yeah, it's just something I came across... watching a W.C. Fields
Mae West
one. Oh, I can't. I could sashay like her, but the studio's too small. And I'm a big Barbra Streisand fan as well, so right. I remember I watched A Star Is Born quite a few times. But loads of films I'd watch more than once.
What's your favourite political biography?
I think the biography of... Eleanor Roosevelt. There's in two parts that came out about 5 or 6 years ago, which is absolutely superb, very interesting, and a lot of previously unreleased material.
What's your favourite colour?
My favourite colour, I like relaxing colours, so there's a kind of purple colour, which goes very well with green and suffragette colours.
Mine's blue. It's because when I was in school, I was in Blue House, and it's just stuck with me, really.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's the reason. Don't read anything into it.
I was in Rutherford, so when I was at school in Formby High, so that's
that
more the physicist.
Yeah,
it didn't have a colour. No, it was about
Nelson,
scientists.
We had blue. It was everything was in blue.
Oh,
yes.
Right.
What political work, fact or fiction, would you send to a political foe?
Not Machiavelli's Prince.
No. What's your funniest moment as a politician?
Probably having to do a debate about climate change when I was just a minister. The whole global thing, followed by one on rhododendrons.
Really?
Immediately afterwards. The only other time I think when I had a bit of a laugh was I had to do a debate on toilet flushers.
Really?
And to be briefed for the debate, I actually had the civil servants in and they brought with them different sorts of toilet flushers. And so I was sat in my ministerial office with this big desk and loads of toilet flushers while they explained the different ways they worked and whether they saved water or not.
Really?
And I thought, this is really what I came into politics for.
Did the speaker say, all those in favour of this motion, or anything like that?
Well, actually, before I went into the chamber to do the debate, I went into the Commons tea room, and we did, I'm ashamed to say, sit there and think of as many jokes about flushers and various other things as I could sensibly get in.
Well, I like those moments of light relief when I'm listening to the Parliament channel. It's great fun, actually.
It's helpful when you're in there to have moments of relief
Of course you need it, yeah. Who influenced you in your life the most, your mother or your father?
Well, both of them in their different ways. I think my mum, because I just identified with her as and her experiences in terms of not being able to get to the grammar school that she passed the 11 plus to go to because of her family circumstances. My dad was much more a calming influence, really, taught me to be patient and how to relax before I went and did difficult things.
Do you know what? It's virtually the same answer that your twin sister Maria gave a few months ago.
We have the same parents.
Well, I know
so
that.
So it's not surprising.
Not surprising, is it? But you've not swapped notes, have you?
No, I've talked to her about it. But maybe that demonstrates that our parents are very consistent in the way they treat us.
Indeed so, yes. How old were you when you first voted? You joined the Labour Party when you were 17, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I voted... I think it was just a month or two after my 18th birthday. That happened to a couple of months, February birthday, and there was local elections in the May, April, May, so about 3 months after.
It would have been Labour, of course, wouldn't it?
It always has been.
If you were a professional sports person, which sport would it be? You're going to say cricket, aren't you? Because you were a cricketer.
Yes, I'm a bit slow. I get hit a lot these days.
You said that on your website.
But I have to say, tennis, if you asked me, I'd love to be able to be a great tennis player, but I'm not.
Would you have liked to have gone to Wimbledon if you'd been a tennis player? Could you see yourself there on the centre court?
Well, I've been on the centre court in the audience, but no, I'm absolutely hopeless at tennis, so I wouldn't last 5 seconds. But that's why I would have been good to be good at tennis.
Who's your All-American hero?
Chrissy Hynde, the lead singer with the Pretenders.
Chrissy Hynde,
probably,
right.
If you
really?
Ask me. Yeah.
Have you had a political... You mentioned somebody before, didn't you?
Politically, probably Eleanor Roosevelt, and Hillary Clinton's been also pretty inspiring.
I mean, Chrissy Hynde is a good answer, because when I asked Maria this, guess what she said? Can you imagine what your sister said?
Who Maria's All-American hero would be?
I'll give you a clue. It wasn't a politician.
Oh, dear. Humphrey Bogart?
Well, you're getting close with Humphrey Bogart. It was actually Groucho Marx.
Oh, Groucho Marx. Well, Maria's a huge Marx Brothers fan.
Yes, I know.
A Marxist of the Groucho sort.
Right. It could have been worse. You could have said Karl Marx, I suppose.
That's why I made the distinction. I don't want to get her into trouble.
No. What she was saying about her favourite film was Duck Soup, which is a political comedy, isn't it?
It is indeed.
With the Marx. Have you seen that film?
I know it very well, actually.
I've got
the
to get
State
it.
Of Fredonia.
I've been looking for it.
Yes, Margaret Dumont is the head of state, and she makes Groucho Marx the president because she likes him, and of course he messes things up completely, and they end up having a war.
Do you think the UK will ever be dismantled during your lifetime?
No, I actually think that the devolution settlement has made it less likely that it'll be dismantled. And I think if you look at what happened in the Glenrothes by-election...
Which Labour won, of course.
Which Labour won against all the expectations and against all the odds in a way that nobody would have predicted. I think some of that was about the unravelling of the Scottish National Party's claims that Scotland could actually survive and prosper as an independent nation after the Icelandic example.
Well, we've got the European elections coming up next year. If there was a referendum on whether to stay in Europe or leave, what would you think the answer would be?
Well, I personally would vote to stay in, and I certainly hope that the British people, once they'd listened to the arguments in detail, would vote to stay in. The European economy is a huge single market for us. 60% of our trade is with Europe. We're a very open economy anyway, but as it things stand at the moment, there's an enormous connection between us and Europe. That doesn't mean to say I agree with a single currency, though.
You don't agree with a single currency? Well, they've passed this new rule this week, haven't we? We can now sell wonky carrots and straight bananas.
That time too.
It's
that
great, isn't
too.
It?
That's nothing progress. Wrong with wonky carrots.
No. Although the media made a big joke about that, there was a very serious point to it, because a fifth of the fruit and veg we sell in this country is rejected because it didn't comply with these wonky food rules that Brussels introduced.
I just think that the important thing about what we need to learn in the 21st century is we have to live more sustainably. And in order to do that, we cannot waste things that are perfectly good for us. Now, the wartime generation, and we were remembering them last weekend, would have looked askance at the idea that you could throw away perfectly good fruit and vegetables because it was misshapen or the wrong shape. And I think it's about time we got back to some of that sense. You can't throw away a lot of perfectly good food just because it's the wrong shape. Chop it up, it tastes just as good.
It does indeed. So I remember the food mountains that Europe had when they stored butter and stuff like that, the sugar mountains, the food mountains.
We are actually well on the way now to changing the way the common agricultural policy works. And so now, instead of subsidising production that nobody wants to eat, we're actually paying farmers to do things that are positively good for the environment, such as ensure they look after the countryside. And that process of reform of the common agricultural policy is really important to getting a world trade deal in the Doha round, which would help us to revive the world economies that are under pretty difficult pressure at the moment.
Finally, Angela, let me ask you this. Name one thing you'd do to reduce global warming.
Well, turn off all of the electrical things that I have plugged in and leave nothing on standby. If you've got a television and you leave it on standby, it takes half of the amount of energy that it uses when it's turned on. So it's really important that we do things like that. People think the whole planet's warming up and there's nothing I can do about it. But actually, there are a load of very practical things you can do. Get low energy-saving light bulbs. Do your washing at a slightly lower temperature. Don't leave the tap running when you're not actually wanting the water. There's a range of things you can do that make a real difference.
It's common sense. Well, I know I never leave any electrical appliance on anyway. As a journalist, in my days as a newspaper hack, some of the terrible tragedies.
I can't believe you were ever a hack.
Me? I wouldn't even think about that at this moment. Yes, I could tell you some stories, I guess. But you know what? Some of the worst tragedies I ever had to cover as a reporter were fires caused by electrical appliances going wrong. Yep. They've been left on.
They tend to do that less now because they're better designed. But the next thing we have to do is design out the standby button. Now, that's oddly where something like the European Union can come in handy, because the Environment Council of the European Union, and I have had the privilege of sitting on that when I was a minister in the Department of Environment, actually can regulate to ensure that in a set number of years, standby buttons are actually designed out, and then it can stop any electrical equipment with standby buttons being sold. So that's a good way of actually producing a result that will lower our carbon footprint.
Yeah, that's good. And one of the advantages, of course, is if it's European-wide and everybody does it,
therefore the manufacturers shift more quickly.
And that's it does indeed. Well, you're listening to Larry Neild here on City Talk 105.9, where the voice of Liverpool, and my studio guest today is Angela Eagle, the Labour MP for Wallasey. I'll be right back with more after this.
The Commons Touch on City Talk 105.9. City at the cinema.
Action. Hello, it's Dan Francisco with this week's movie top 10.
10.
Hard-hitting drama in Hunger.
9.
Cartoon fun with Igor.
8.
Cultures clash in Easy Virtue.
7.
George Clooney and Brad Pitt star in Burn after reading.
6.
Oliver Stone directs his George Bush biopic, W.
5.
Loyalties are tested in cop thriller Pride and Glory.
4.
More scary goings on in Saw 5.
3.
Ricky Gervais can see the dead in Ghost Town.
2.
Scholastic shenanigans with beautiful looking teens in High School Musical 3.
Number 1.
Bond is back in Quantum of Solace.
It's James Bond, British Secret Service. I don't know how I could have messed up.
I will need you to get rid of him for me.
That's not gonna be a problem.
City at the cinema.
City Talk Breakfast with Kim Hughes and Duncan Barks.
Monday morning from 6, the fragrant Kim Hughes returns, and I'm Duncan Barks. They'll be guiding you through the morning and getting the UK's finest celebrity experts to dissect this year's I'm a Celebrity. Max Clifford and Paparazzi King Darren Lyons join the team after 8. And there's reaction to the weekend's news, TV and sport, and Phil Easton, he gets all the best gigs, will be giving you a clue as to who's having a laugh live from a webcam in Spain. The PhilCam goes live from 6 o'clock Monday morning.
Kim Hughes. Duncan Barks. Kim and Duncan at breakfast. City Talk 105.9.
12 weeks, 12 top restaurants, one heck of a deal. City Talk's Talking Taste voucher offer is now on. Log on to citytalk.fm to see which restaurant of the week you could be dining at for half the price of everyone else. Get your hands on a £50 restaurant voucher for just £25 with City Talk's Talking Taste.
The Commons Touch on City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back. This is Larry Neild on City Talk 105.9 with the Commons Touch, and I'm talking this afternoon to Angela Eagle, the Labour MP for Wallasey. Angela, the pre-budget report date has been announced this week. November the 24th, your boss, the Chancellor, is going to stand up. He's going to tell us all that he's going to abolish tax. He's going to get rid of VAT. No?
I couldn't possibly...
Have we been over-optimistic?
Perhaps a little. I couldn't possibly tell you what's actually in the pre-budget report, but it will be a time when the Chancellor will set out the Treasury's new forecasts of what's going to be going on in the economy.
For next year.
And obviously we've just had the Bank of England's inflation report. All the independent... forecasters are saying that next year is going to be pretty tough. And so what we'll be doing is unveiling the Treasury's official reports of what they think is going to be going on. And we will also be setting some changes in policy to deal with that.
Well, Gordon Brown has said earlier this week that the world leaders should bring down taxes in a coordinated way. Now, if he's saying that, you would imagine that we're going to do that as well.
Well, I couldn't possibly comment ahead of the pre-budget report,
But it would make sense, wouldn't it?
You wouldn't expect me to, but the Prime Minister has said that a coordinated fiscal stimulus around the world would help. That means putting money into the economy. Now, we're in a funny position in the UK because George Osborne and the Conservatives have said that they're not in favour of a fiscal stimulus. They say they want to cut taxes a bit, but they say they want to do that in a neutral way without increasing borrowing. Now, that actually means you wouldn't get the stimulus of putting money back into people's pockets to help us get through the tough times that we have ahead. We've had a 1.5% cut in interest rates, which will help. But because the UK is a very open trading economy, because of our history as an empire, we have lots of trading contacts with people. You've got to be careful that if you stimulate the economy nationally, a lot of that doesn't just go in exports, and so the benefits get exported abroad. That's why it's important for an economy like the UK, if possible, for us to get agreement around the world that in order to prevent the recession being worse than it might otherwise be, that we can actually have a fiscal stimulus coordinated. And that's what both the Chancellor and the Prime Minister, I'm sure, will be talking about this weekend in Washington at the so-called G20 meeting.
Well, you keep using the word fiscal stimulus, but, you know, in everyday speak, people read into that tax cuts. And the advantage of
that's what that means. It can be all sorts of different tax cuts. It means putting money back into people's pockets.
Because if people have got money in their pockets, they will spend it, and that's going to help shops, businesses, everything. And so it's kick-starting the economy on the road to recovery.
But we've now got a Conservative Party, the only one in the advanced world that is arguing that you shouldn't do that at the moment. They're saying that borrowing shouldn't be raised in order to stimulate spending in that way, and that it would be the wrong thing to do. The thing that struck me in the last few months is how wrong they've been about everything. They opposed saving Northern Rock. They opposed what the special banking bill, which enabled us to save Bradford in Bingley and deal with the Icelandic banks. They've opposed the ban on short selling, which prevented people speculating on stocks going down, which were destabilising the banks. We've just had something put out in Wallasey by my opponent, which appears to say that they oppose saving the banks, although nationally they seem to say that they're in favour of it. So we've got an opposition that seem to just make the wrong judgment on everything at the moment.
It's hard to believe, isn't it, Angela? A few months ago, people were queuing around the block to take money out of Northern Rock, and now they're queuing to get in the door to put money in Northern Rock.
I think the important thing about what we've seen, I think all economic commentators now are saying that this is the worst shock to the international financial system for 80 or 90 years. We've got a financial system because of changes in information technology, which trades across borders very quickly. It's interconnected, it's very integrated. And so we've seen the fact that Lehman Brothers was made bankrupt in America caused these huge ripples of difficulties in the rest of the financial system, affecting our own banks. A lot of the problems have been caused by the subprime mortgage problems in America, which have infected all other banks around the world. So I think the important thing that G20 leaders will be looking at this weekend is what new safeguards can we design for a world, the 21st century, very different, very interdependent, to ensure that this kind of problem doesn't manifest itself again and threaten stability and real people's living standards.
So I think that the world finance industry will probably come up with its own survival plan on the basis, well, we're not going down that route again, and I think they'll draw up their own rules to stop it happening.
We have to have international monitoring. We've got to have more transparency so that we can value assets properly. We have to have remuneration systems that don't reward people in the short term for doing things that actually destabilise their institutions and their banks in the long term. Because in the end, it's real people that suffer. If there's no money in the system, small businesses can't borrow, homeowners can't borrow to mortgage houses. You see what then happens in the housing market in the UK or in the jobs market. We have to remember that small and medium-sized enterprises employ over half of the people who are in work in the UK now. And so our immediate issue here is to ensure that we can get money flowing back around the system so people can borrow for the things they need to borrow for, to keep people in employment, to buy houses. And that's one of the key things we're focusing on now.
Gordon Brown seems to have put his hand on the tiller in a way that has earned him a national and an international reputation as the rescue man, or the miracle man, if you like. Is that justified?
Well, I I think it is. I think the recapitalisation scheme, which saved our banks four weeks ago. This is the money that we've put in to buy shares in three of the major banks in the UK. The guarantee of interbank lending, which is really important, £200 billion worth, and the special liquidity scheme, which we've extended, the Bank of England are running that, mean that you can get... If you think that... really, this money lending through the bank system is almost like the oil in an engine. If the engine is the economy, if there's no oil, the engine tries to run, it just seizes up.
Yes, it does. Yes.
And the circumstances in international finance have meant that these credit markets have seized up. And so really, the recapitalisation scheme put oil back in the engine, and we've got to now make certain that everybody else is putting oil in the engine in the world. And if you look... Our Prime Minister's scheme has been copied throughout the advanced economies in Europe and in America, and that's why it has now a chance of working. We've now got to go on and ensure that we can get people lending to each other again, we can get people spending, and that's where this idea of a fiscal stimulus, as the parlance goes, comes in.
Fiscal stimulus.
It just means money in your pocket.
It means tax cuts. It means they're on the way. Tax cuts are definitely on the way. This is Larry Neild on City Talk 105.9 with the Commons Touch, and I'm talking to Angela Eagle, the Labour MP for Wallasey. Angela, let me ask you, we mentioned money, we mentioned fiscal things, tax cuts, as I say. I'll keep my fingers crossed. What we need to see is that money reaching the people, the small business people, the people who have got cash flow problems and are going belly up. I mean, I heard Claire Curtis-Thomas in the House this week talking about businesses on Merseyside short of a few bob, and they're going bust because they just run out of money, they can't pay the bills, and they're snookered. What I want to see is the government making sure that money that they're putting into the system... if you like, cascades down to these small businesses to make sure that as many as possible can survive.
Well, for example, the government have said that they will pay all their bills within 10 days. Now, the government spends £180 billion a year on procurement for things, from paperclips all the way through to buildings, fleet, local government as well. And so we've said that we will pay our bills in 10 days. It's quite important that the larger companies that have a string of suppliers also announce that they will pass on those payments, those fast payments, to their suppliers. It's important that we all work together to try and keep as many businesses going as possible, especially those that are sound. Now, the Prime Minister's already managed to negotiate with the European Investment Bank an extra £4 billion of funding for small business, and we're just working through how we can get that out there. Small businesses can use that money by applying via their banks to have access to it for investment purposes. So there are a range of things going on, which I hope will enable us to keep as much of the economy going as possible. And what we don't want to see is perfectly good businesses going to the wall, because at the moment there's this problem with getting money to them. The banks aren't lending.
Some people have said that, if you like, we've been walked into a very gloomy scenario because of, if you like, the media and it reporting that makes everything appear to be bleaker than it actually is. I mean, if you know, we're up here at the City Town. If you look out of the window and you look around Liverpool, the streets are busy, there are people, shoppers, Liverpool ones crowded with shoppers. It doesn't look like the end of the world to me, somehow.
Well, no, it's not the end of the world, but it is a challenge and it needs to be faced by policymakers. So I think that the important thing to remember is confidence is important, but also if we don't get this engine back in, this engine running by getting oil back into it, by allowing banks to lend properly, by ensuring that people can borrow reasonable levels on mortgages to get the housing market moving, we will have problems. And we've seen unemployment rising more than we've seen in the last few years. So we have got to change our policy to accommodate with these new realities, as well as doing what they're doing in Washington this weekend, which is trying to design a system that will prevent this kind of crash from happening again.
Unemployment's now reached 1.8 million. We've always had pretty high unemployment around these parts, particularly in Liverpool. The chances are that early in the new year it's going to hit 2 million. Are we heading towards 3 million, do you think?
Well, I certainly hope not, and that's why we need to take action now to prevent the worst job losses that might happen if there were a more serious downturn. I think it's important to remember as well that there are 3 million more jobs in the economy than there were 10 years ago, and that we have the highest levels of labour market participation, nearly 75% of any country in Europe. But at the same time...
What do you mean by that is 75%
of the working age
people
are in
jobs,
work.
Are in
yeah,
work.
And there are still... Nearly 500,000 vacancies in the economy. So there are still jobs, but it's tighter and it's more difficult than it's been for some time.
Because when you mentioned that 75% of the working population are in jobs, around Merseyside it's 60-something percent, isn't it?
Yes, it varies from place to place. I think it's important to remember as well, because of the changes we've made to Job Centre Plus, we are much more proactive now in being able to give people help fast. I remember when I first came in as a minister, we reformed Job Centre Plus. When I first walked in, a job centre had the furniture actually bolted to the ground and nobody was there really there to help very much. We've now got personal advisors, individually tailored assistance, lots of training opportunities and potential to get you up off and back out there in a job if you've suffered from being made redundant, and that's what we're determined to do.
Because one of your jobs as a Treasury Minister is to look after the government real estate, and I was reading that one of your reports that it's worth about £30 billion, expensive offices in London. Why don't they move some of those jobs up here to Merseyside?
Oh, we've been doing that. If you look out of your window over there, you'll see the HMRC... building, HMRC, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs building
in the docks where
there are loads and loads of jobs that used to be done in London that are now done up here. And in fact, we have exported, I think, about 20,000 jobs out of London into the region, some of which have come up here, and we'll continue to do that.
Do you see any more coming in the, you know, in the not too distant future?
Well, there's a process of actually taking jobs out of London, civil service jobs, and taking them into different parts of the country, and that is an ongoing process, and Merseyside has benefited from that.
I've always felt that what would be a good idea, just to show that we are a united kingdom, was to have whole departments, not if you like back office functions, but whole departments, say, for example, the cultural ministry moving to Liverpool and headquartered here. I mean, we are the European capital of culture. I couldn't think of a better
place.
And
hasn't it been a fantastic year so far?
It's been all right, hasn't it?
Yeah. I went and watched King Lear last weekend.
How
I
managed. Was it?
I thought it was really a very good production. I know that they've been a bit snobby about it down in London, all the reviewers, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was
I went
good
a few weeks
production.
Earlier. I went to see the musical Eric's.
Oh, right.
That was
the
fabulous.
Upstairs at Eric's
it
one.
It was fabulous. It was, yeah.
My sister went. I didn't manage to
it
see that
really,
one.
It was really, really good.
It's been
first
a fantastic
class.
Year, though, in terms of events. I think everybody's enjoyed it.
Well, we've had Ringo Starr, we've had Paul McCartney, we've had La Machine.
Yes, the spider. Who could forget the spider?
We've had Super Lamb Banana. So I sum up Capital of Culture for me as a year of two beetles, a spider and a flock of lambs. That's my summary of Capital of Culture for Liverpool.
Very good. Chester Zoo will be interested in that one.
Well, they should be indeed. Let me ask you before we go, Angela, do you think we're going to have a general election next year? Or should we have one?
The answer to that is we could have one 3 weeks from now, any time from 3 weeks from now to April, early May 2010.
So this is the answer
there's only
you'll always get
one
from a
person in the entire world who knows what the answer to that is, and he's not in the studio because he's in Washington trying to put in place a new structure to ensure the world economy can be saved.
I don't believe for one minute that the Prime Minister will wake up one morning and say, I know, I'm going to have an election. And nobody knows about it.
Well, I certainly hope he doesn't.
No, I know, but he must talk about it.
Well, he hasn't talked about it to me, we can have an election any time, and it's our job as Labour Members of Parliament to be ready whenever he decides to call it.
Indeed so. See, to me, we're going to have Barack Obama installed as the American President January 20th.
January the 20th, yeah.
Gordon Brown's flying high, racing head, in that he's climbing up the ratings again. He's very, very popular. He would be daft not to go to the country next spring.
Well, I'll take that as an election submission and make sure he hears it next time I talk to him.
But will you? That's very good of you. I won't be a bit surprised.
Larry Neild says.
Larry Neild says. But the thing is, of course, if he leaves it until 2010, we're going to have unemployment of 3 million, if you listen to some of the more...
I don't think we should get too depressed. I think that there are things that we can do to mitigate some of the problems that we've seen as a result of the credit crunch. And the fiscal stimulus we were talking about earlier, tax cuts to you and me, is part of it. So are the cuts in interest rates. And it's important that we spend our time ensuring that those who are having a rough time because of the downturn in the economy know that the government is on their side and stands ready to help.
So we're going to have these tax cuts. I don't know how quickly they're going to come. I mean,
have to wait until the 24th of November to know what we're going to have, Larry.
And when will we get them? I mean, I'm just wondering whether I should have a spending spree over Christmas or, you know, wait until the January sales.
I think you should do what you like to have a good, enjoyable Christmas.
It's expensive Christmas, isn't it?
It can be.
Do you think that people will cut back? I mean, I was watching one television programme and saying, look at all these shoppers. It was in London, actually, not Liverpool. It was in London. Look at all these shoppers. Guess what? Not many of them are carrying bags.
There's only one way, really, to find out, and that's to wait until the Office of National Statistics tell us what's happened to retail sales, and that'll be after Christmas.
What's happening in Wallasey? Anything hitting the headlines over there at the moment?
Well, I've just had a big energy summit where we've had people in to give them advice about how to save money on their energy bills and what help is out there to get new boilers and make their houses more energy efficient. And there are enormous amounts of money available for grants. I think in Wallasey so far we've had over £6 million spent on Warmfront, which makes your house more energy efficient.
Warmfront is a government-sponsored scheme.
It's a government-sponsored scheme for people who are over pension age to have access to energy efficiency measures. So that's like new boilers, loft insulation, cavity wall insulation. So the money they spend on keeping their house warm goes further.
Why don't the government issue things like, you know, for pensioners and people on low incomes, like woolly jumpers and things like that to keep warm? Wouldn't that help?
Well, there are all sorts of ways of keeping warm, and we were talking about quite a lot of those at the Energy Summit today. So we've had a good attendance. There's lots of money out there. The energy utility companies are mandated now by the government to spend nearly £4 billion in the next 3 years to put more measures into people's houses. And I just want to make certain that every single person in Wallasey who isn't entitled to that help gets it.
And how can they find out? I mean, where do they go to get this help? How will they find out?
Well, there's a thing called the Energy Saving Trust, and there is a free phone number, which is 0800 512 012, and if you phone that, they'll be able to help you.
Well, let's just get that telephone number again. This is not just for Wallasey, this is for anybody.
Yes,
0800 512 012.
You can stay in touch by asking me if you contact me at www.angelaeaglemp, that's all one word, .co.uk.
And the number again is 0800...
512 012 for the Energy Saving Trust and help with your energy efficiency and electricity and fuel bills.
And we can all stay warm and get that and low energy bulbs, and we'll wear home and dry. Angela Eagle, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thanks a lot. Nice to be here.
This is Larry Neild, City Talk 105.9 with the Commons Touch. I'll be back with more after this.
The Commons Touch on City Talk 105.9.
City Talk.
News from a different angle.
If you look right and left, there are houses, a train station, cars driving up and down. It's like any other street. But look straight ahead and you're faced with a massive stone wall that keeps in over 1,000 of Merseyside's worst robbers, rapists and murderers. If you stretch your neck, you can just about see the bars on the windows. Makes you wonder if there's anyone looking back at you. You might have even driven past the jail hundreds of times. But every time you do, you wonder what goes on inside.
It can be quiet for a couple of weeks. It can be quiet for a month. But sometimes it'll flare up. You know, I think the last skirmish was last week. Some wings are worse than others, though. I-wing and G-wing are the worst. There's beatings on there every day.
We had to have our meals downstairs in reception. Some lad only asked for a bit more curry and got through all up the hall by his scrib.
News from a different angle. City Talk.
The Duncan Barks Show with Will Batchelor.
You are a bachelor boy.
Monday morning from 9 a.m. It's Islamic Awareness Week this week. So how much do you really know about the UK's second largest religion? And more to the point, do you ever think that it might come to eclipse Christianity as the UK's dominant religion? And after 11, can a band ever survive the loss of a lead singer?
Will Batchelor, filling in for Duncan Barks. City Talk 105.9.
It's easy if you really need to get from A to B.
Clean, safe and reliable. Alpha cars are where you want, when you want them. 486-8797. Callback service now available.
Call Alpha on 486-8797.
City Talk
News. First with the biggest local stories.
This is the ball of Tiger Woods. Lammy, what about this?
Vern, this is extremely difficult. This is one of the toughest pitches on the entire place here.
Like that.
That's the kind of moment they'll be missing at Birkdale next month. Tiger out, having won the US Open with a broken leg and a damaged cruciate.
I'm glad I'm done. I'm done.
I mean, if I get asked to do something in Liverpool and it's for kids or local charities, then it doesn't matter about the detail. If I'm available, I'll do it.
What are you most looking forward to about Beatles Day, the newly formed Beatles Day?
Yeah, well, I'm just looking forward to the mere fact that we're going to get loads and loads of people into Liverpool. We are the city of culture. We are all doing our little bit. I think it's going very, very well at the moment. And I think this is just going to be another spoke to the wheel.
News on the hour, every hour.
City Talk 105.9. Radio stations. Choices for listening.
It's the magic number.
What does it all mean?
City Talk 105.9. The voice of Liverpool. Radio City 96.7. Liverpool's hit music station. Magic 1548. The best of the 60s, 70s and more.
It's the magic number.
Radio City. Magic 1548. City Talk 105.9.
This is the Commons Touch.
The Commons Touch.
On City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the Commons Touch with me, Larry Neild, here on City Talk 105.9. Well, earlier I was talking to the Wallasey MP and Treasury Minister, Angela Eagle. I'm now joined by Jeremy Hawthorne, local solicitor, and a man who often has a lot to say about anything, particularly in the community. Good afternoon, Jeremy.
Good afternoon to you.
I was just thinking, Jeremy, that you being a lawyer and thinking about there's a growing unemployment, house repossessions, domestic strife, you guys must be making a fortune at the credit crunch, is that right?
Well, some people maybe, but there are others who are looking down the barrels of bankruptcy, and anyone who makes their money out of house purchases, which I don't, is simply got nothing to do at the moment.
Really, yeah, yeah. But bankruptcy, I mean, that must be quite heartbreaking if you're representing somebody who's facing possible ruin because of the credit crunch.
I can only assume, so again, it's not something I do, but I can imagine it's pretty traumatic, and there must be more of that at the moment.
Well, Gordon Brown's talking about a worldwide cut in taxes. Do you go along with that?
I can see where it's coming from. I think that it may well be that in a year's time, the general picture will be that Gordon Brown has saved world capitalism, which is rather a bad credential for a Labour Party leader, but there you go.
Well, what else could he do, though? I mean, I don't know.
I guess that's the part of the problem, is that here you've got a situation where the whole market system is on the verge of collapse and no one really believes in it anymore, but there's no real alternative ready in the wings like there has been in previous times.
Well, what was it? I mean, previous, you're thinking of like communism, should we?
For one example, or any form of move from the left, it's not readily apparent, as I say, from anywhere that I can see.
But isn't it incredible, though, how the whole thing has collapsed like a pack of cards? It started and it's had a a worldwide impact, really. I mean, earlier this week we got the news that Germany was now officially in recession.
Yeah, and it started in the States with it being suddenly realised, I think, that people had been lent far too much money when they actually didn't have the money to repay it and were never going to, and that the houses they were putting up as security weren't worth as much as they were thinking. And, of course, that had been apparent in England as well. I guess there comes a point where people suddenly realise, well, we've all borrowed a bit too much.
Well, the pre-budget date has been announced. It's going to be on the 24th of November, and the Chancellor, Alistair Darling, will announce what his proposals are for next year. What advice would you give him?
Try and keep protection of the vulnerable up front, because they are often forgotten about at times like this. Talking about health, about safety provisions, and all the rest. And history, I think, shows that they tend to be forgotten when times get hard, but they actually matter. So keep them first.
You do rather get the impression, don't you, that the little people can be thrown to the wolves in these situations, and the big guys look after themselves.
That, I guess, will be true now as it has been. I think the only difference this time is that a lot of people further up the tree are getting worried about it, and the prospect of people being thrown out of work, I mean, isn't just at the bottom of the social heap, it's also people towards the top as well, who are suddenly going to get told, well, maybe you're a bit old and we'll do without you.
Well, I was thinking, well, that would be awful, that wouldn't it, if people who were, if you like, getting to the latter end of their working lives were just chucked on the scrap heap prematurely.
Yes, that has happened historically, of course, when big factories close, and anyone who is in their last years of working life just finds it impossible at the Labour Exchange to get anything whatsoever. And I guess that's where we may be in for a round of that.
I was listening to a guy just the other day, and he was saying about, he was in his, well, early 50s, really. He was only about 53, and he's in the building trade. He's applied for job after job after job, nothing at all. Nobody will even give him an interview. And he's got, you know, I mean, he's potentially got 15 years, 20 years of working life ahead of him, but he can't, there's nothing for him to do.
Yes. And what will happen, of course, is that people in that position have got all the skills they've built up over the years, and supposing there's a big turnaround and there's a big demand for builders again, will the building firm say, yes, we'll have him because he's got all the experience, or will they think, well, he cost a bit much, I'm sure we can do it with someone who isn't quite as good as him? Where, of course, you end up with a de-skilling of the workforce, which I'm sure there are people prepared to take advantage of that, and I don't really like them very much.
Yeah, I mean, I remember in one of the problems Liverpool faced when we started to regenerate in the late 1990s, because of the fact that we didn't have the skill base of people to rebuild Liverpool, we were importing people in, firstly from Manchester and then from, if you like, Poland, further afield, to do a lot of the building. I remember going to Liverpool One, and the site signs on one part of Liverpool One were in Polish.
Right, OK. That's, I guess, an example where, if it were, there comes a point where you say, well, apprenticeships, we'll cut those because it's far too expensive to train people. Much better to have people you can simply import ready-made, a bit like football sides, I guess, importing from abroad. But what then happens when you maybe want to expand and you suddenly find you've not trained people over years who would step into the shoes, but they're not there anymore?
And that's going to be a big problem. You know, even if you like the motor industry, because General Motors is in the doldrums at the moment. They're already predicting a huge loss. That could have implications across the Mersey-Ellesmere port. Hope it doesn't. But once you start getting rid of car builders, you can't just pluck them out of thin air when the things start to pick up again, as they probably will.
No, it would be nice as well if whoever can do the thinking did the thinking about, well, maybe, and this is one example, the making of cars. Let's have another look at that, because there's talk of changing the energy source and using a lot more electric cars and maybe hydrogen cars and so on. And let's have a think environment as well as just simply think economy, because if anything, that is a chance to change the way things are done and retrain the people who are already in work. Don't feel you've got to throw them out.
Well, this is Larry Neild here on City Talk 105.9 with the Commons Touch, and we're talking politics, and I'm talking to Liverpool solicitor Jeremy Hawthorne. Well, Jeremy, you just mentioned there about doing something about the if you like, green issues while we're in this economic situation. I've got a fear that actually they'll say, well, I hope this doesn't sound like a pun, but we'll put that on the back burner.
Yeah, well, that's true enough. And it's the generation of electricity that, again, someone's got to take hold of that, because it's clear as anything that you're getting warnings about power cuts in 5 or 6 years' time, and that may be slightly sort of panic news, and we may not get them after all, but that's being said. And the only way to bridge that is by going a lot greener in the way that we produce our energy, going with wind power, wave power, and all the rest. The technology is there. The will to put it into effect is not. And that really could change, and that would probably create a lot of employment.
We've lived for the past decade or so in an age of relative comfort, consumerism. We've all become very materialistic. Well, I haven't, but a lot of people have. Do you think people in Merseyside are ready for a deep recession, maybe having to, you know, pull up the drawbridge and take care?
Well, it would bring people back to thinking what's important. And I think the problem we've had in the last 10, 15 years is we've all started to absorb one way or another, and whether we like it or not, the idea that if you're poor, you're supposed to be unhappy. And that actually isn't necessarily the case. And it's not the amount of money you've got. It is actually who you've got you can rely on, how you conduct yourself, and whether you are interested in life or not. And that actually doesn't require you to be rich. But I'm afraid we've been bombarded with the idea over many years that you aren't doing anything useful with yourself unless you're earning a pot of money. Now, let's get rid of that for a minute.
Well, I was talking to some friends the other day, and they were saying they were thinking of getting an allotment to start growing their own food, ready for when the dark and dismal days come along. I thought that's a bit extreme, actually. Well, hard work, anyway.
It would be healthy, I'm sure. Depends what you manage to grow, but yeah, okay, go for it. And if you've got a car, don't drive everywhere. Just walk short distances. Get a bike, go on the bus, train.
Because there is a school of thought that's saying that we're talking ourselves into a deep recession, when actually if we just all, each individual, took a bit of care in what we do, if you like, drive slowly, use the car less, take care of what we do, switch lights off and stuff like that, collectively we would all do a lot to save a lot of the things that we maybe can no longer afford.
Well, yes, everybody can do a bit. And that is true. I suppose it doesn't actually bring back 10,000 jobs, which BT are saying they're going to shed, and that's the sort of thing which is hard to pretend you do anything about that. But I think in terms of whether you're saying, well, this is the way I live or nothing, then, well, have another think about it, and do you really need half the things we get?
Do you remember a few years ago, going back to, I think it was the 90s, when ITN had these, like, Black Fridays, when they were announced all the job losses that had been that week, and it was like a grim toll, wasn't it, watching the news, and it was so miserable.
They did a map, didn't they?
They did a map.
On the telly, and they would give figures.
It's getting a bit like that now, isn't it, with these announcements every day? You've mentioned BT, and some of the banks are cutting back.
Yeah, and the banking is in...
JCB, I was reading, they're cutting back.
Yeah, and when they say the figures in thousands, it's actually quite easy to let them wash over us, because you think, well, actually, that's a figure for a moment, and actually it's not the people in your street. But it is like someone I know who's a building surveyor, and he's just got no buildings to survey at the moment, and actually his firm is saying, well, maybe we will dispense with you. Now, that's a human cost. It's a figure of one.
Yes, but where can he go?
But for
because
him,
presumably nobody else is surveying either.
Well, that's right, and the work, so far as he says, simply isn't there at the moment, but there he is, 25 years experience, knows the stuff at the back of his hand. You'd hate to think that expertise getting lost for when you need it.
Well, I always like to end on an upbeat note if I can, Jeremy. Is there any glimmer of hope for the future, do you think?
It might make us a little bit more relaxed about our material side, if you know that it is... Well, it's hard, isn't it?
Well, but you know, we're coming up to Christmas, aren't we? I mean, we normally spend at Christmas time. Are we just going to, instead of spend, are we just going to spend, or maybe spend, but not go the whole hog? Cut back, I think.
And maybe spending time with people, actually, you just got to say, well, that at least I have got.
Will Santa Claus be given his redundancy notice this year, do you think?
I think the last thing I saw was Santa Claus had lost the discs containing all the data the children he was going to deliver the presents to.
Really? Very good. Thanks, Jeremy. Well, on that cheerful note, it's Larry Neal here on City Talk 105.9 with the Commons Touch. I've been talking to Jeremy Hawthorne, local solicitor, and earlier was talking to Angela Eagle, the Labour MP for Wallasey. Coming up after this programme, we're going over